God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. Friends, get ready for a special treat. Brother Hutchings has just completed an update of his popular commentary on the book of Daniel. And for the next several days, we'll be doing programs on that important book of the Bible. But we're doing it in a little bit different manner. First of all, Southwest Radio's Vice President, Dr. Kenneth Hill, has recorded all the scriptures from the 12 chapters of Daniel. You'll hear those at the start of each broadcast. Then, instead of Brother Hutchings teaching verse by verse, I'll be asking him questions about the chapter, which he in turn will answer. You'll get a commentary on Daniel on the programs, and when you get the book, you'll have the full commentary that makes the book so valuable. Here now is Dr. Hill with the first chapter of Daniel.
In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake to Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Meltzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Meltzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these 4 children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus.
You just heard Dr. Kenneth Hill reading the first chapter of Daniel. We're ready now to begin our question and answer session with Brother Hutchings. Brother Hutchings, in Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, we read that Israel was invaded and taken by Nebuchadnezzar in the third year of Jehoiakim. What led to this conquest of Judah by a foreign power?
Well, first, we know that the nation of Israel was divided after the death of Solomon. Solomon had a huge tax program, and the people demanded relief by the new king who came after Solomon, one of Solomon's sons. He told them that he was not going to reduce taxes. In fact, he was going to increase taxes. So the nation was divided into two kingdoms. The northern kingdom was composed of 10 tribes, and the southern kingdom, Judah, was composed of 2 tribes. Now, in the northern kingdom, the apostasy that invaded the country through false teachers, false prophets, was bad. They had good kings and bad kings, mostly bad kings. And about 720 B.C., after about 300 years of the northern kingdom, in the divided kingdom, Assyria invaded, and God allowed it to happen, and took that kingdom into captivity. Most of the men of the northern kingdom was taken to Assyria, also many of the women. And I've been to Nineveh and seen the remains of the old king's castles and palaces there. And on the walls, you can read in cuneiform the story of what happened to the northern kingdom of Israel. They were sawed in half, many were fed to the alligators, and finally some were allowed to return. But the northern kingdom suffered a severe judgment. In the southern kingdom, it was some better. There were areas and times in which they would have good kings or bad kings. And finally, there was a king named Josiah in about 630 B.C., and the prophet came to him and showed him a copy of the law. And he was reading Deuteronomy, especially the 28th, 29th, and 30th chapters. And he was reading there that what would happen to Israel if they did certain things and disobeyed the law, that at least 100 curses would come upon them. And so he said, my goodness, we got to get our act together. We got to clean up the country. So he threw the prostitutes out of the temple, the idols, and called for a revival throughout the country. God came to him later and spoke to him and said, Josiah, you've been a good king. You've done exactly right. And we read in Scripture that he was the best king that Judah had had. But God told Josiah, I just can't spare the nation, though. It's gone too far. And he allowed Josiah to be killed so he would not see what was going to happen to his nation and Jerusalem and the temple. After Josiah died, Jehoiakim was on the throne for some time, and it was during Jehoiakim's reign that God allowed Babylon to come in and ravage the country and take over Jerusalem. And Jehoiakim did bad. He didn't keep his agreement with Babylon. So they got rid of him and put Jehoiachin on the throne. And Jehoiachin only reigned about 3 months, and they didn't like him, so they took him into captivity and put another one of the princes on the throne, Zedekiah. And Zedekiah, after a reign of a few years, they didn't like what he was doing. So they took him to Babylon, and his family killed his sons before his eyes, and then put out Zedekiah's eyes. And then Zedekiah was taken to captivity and died. So Babylon took over the whole nation of Judah.
Now, Brother Hutchings, how did Daniel and his three Hebrew companions end up in Babylon?
Well, as Assyria had done in the northern kingdom, Babylon also took most of the able-bodied men and women back to Babylon. And they took all the priests, the Sanhedrin. And we read in Josephus and 2 Kings chapter 24 that the priests and rulers were taken and beheaded in Babylon. And in all, in the first exodus of the captivities taken to Babylon, there were altogether 10,000. Of course, this was during the reign of Jehoiachin and Zedekiah also later, and there were thousands taken back, leaving only in Israel the old people, and they brought in the Moabites and mainly the Edomites, and I think most of the Palestinians today were actually Edomites. The Herods were Edomites. After taking all the captives back into Babylon, a few of the royal family, the young and best educated, like Daniel and his three companions, they were spared to serve in the king's court. And this was not unusual, because we have to remember that Babylon still tried to get the best educated and the best minds out of all the country to continue the idea of Babylon as a world empire.
Well, was Babylon a continuance of Babel?
Yes, it was. The Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar was in reality a revival of the Babylon of Nimrod, and that's what the name means, Babylon. They were both built on the same site with the same ambitious program in mind. Nimrod started a space program whereby he could eventually reach the heavens. And God considered the project and realized that what man had determined in his heart or in his mind to do, that he could accomplish. And so God went down to Babel and confounded their speech, scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. And we have little difficulty in establishing that the Tower of Babylon as a historic reality, not the fact that there was a ruler named Nimrod, but we can actually establish that there was a Babylon. It also appears evident that something happened to the language of that particular civilization to confound their language. Now, I would like to quote from Halley's Bible Handbook, which states, "It is commonly thought by archaeologists that more likely the actual site of Babylon, where the Tower of Babel once stood, can be identified with the ruins just north of Marduk's temple. Now, it has been found in an ancient tablet which reads, quote, 'The building of this illustrious tower offended the gods. In a night, they threw down what they had built. They scattered them abroad and made strange their speech. The ancient mound of Nimrod, which stands near the site of Nineveh and Burz Nimrod, the temple of Nimrod, and other historic sites which were named after Nimrod, have been located. And actually, the old Tower of Babel has been identified by archaeologists as having been the former site of the Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar. So it's easy to establish the fact that Babylon was simply a continuance of the old Tower of Babel system and the idea of maintaining a one world nation or society under the ruler of one king, and Nebuchadnezzar had that vision.
Well, Brother Hutchings, why were Daniel and his three companions made eunuchs, as we read in chapter 1, verse 7?
Well, that was a common practice in those times, to take the most perfect young men physically and mentally and put them in the king's court, because in the king's court you had all the king's wives and all his concubines, so that was a problem. So they simply simplified the problem by making eunuchs out of them. And it was also prophesied by Isaiah to King Hezekiah. You know, he invited 100 years before Daniel was taken to Babylon, that the young princes of the royal line would be made eunuchs. Hezekiah invited the delegation from Babylon to come to the palace, and he was showing them around everything he had. And Hezekiah came in and warned him that later that Babylon would be a great nation, and they would come in and take over Jerusalem and make kings out of the princes of Israel. And this actually happened. Daniel and his three companions were of the royal lineage of David, so they were smart young men. And so they went through and decided, well, these four we can use. And the king saw them and liked them and put them in his palace, but of course they had to be made eunuchs.
Well, you know, Brother Hutchings, we read about the vessels in the temple, but nothing is mentioned about the Ark of the Covenant. Was the Ark not in the temple at that time?
There is no mention of the vessels that were taken back to Babylon and put in the treasury of the king, where all the vessels also that they used to worship their gods. There's nothing about the Ark being among those vessels. Now, we go back to the time of Solomon when the Queen of Sheba came up to visit him and praise him. It's indicated there that she stayed some time with Solomon, and it is thought that she had a son by Solomon. And, you know, there is a legend, and not only a legend, actually Israel accepts this as a history, that this son took the ark back to Ethiopia, and that's where it is still today. Some believe it was brought back when the Pelasha Jews of Ethiopia were brought out of that country in 1991. Another story is that Jeremiah took the ark from the temple before the Babylonians got it and took it over on Mount Nebo, that's over in Jordan, and hid it in a cave. There are a lot of caves on the western slope of Mount Nebo. And a couple of times in going to Mount Nebo, while the tour group was going through an old Byzantine church there, I've gone down the sides of Mount Nebo and looked in some of those caves. Of course, I didn't see the ark there. Of course, the Jews believe, some of the rabbis believe, it's buried on the Temple Mount under where the temple stood and is now under the area of the Dome of the Rock. Some claim they have actually seen it there by boring through the western wall under the Temple Mount. But I don't know that any pictures have been taken. But the ark will be revealed, I believe, one day when it's according to God's purpose.
Well, you know, Brother Hutchings, Babylon is in modern-day Iraq, and you've been there, right?
Yes, I've been to Iraq.
How much of it did you see?
I've seen practically the whole country from Nineveh or Mosul in the north to Ur in the south. I can remember it was back in 1978, I took a tour group of 103 to several countries, and Saddam Hussein actually put our tour group on a train, and we took a night journey up to Nineveh. The military police were walking up and down the aisles all night, and we couldn't get out of our seat. We were told that Israel might bomb that train. It was during a time of war, and we would all be killed, but Israel would get the blame. You know, Saddam Hussein wasn't a very nice fella.
Absolutely.
But I've seen the whole country pretty much.
Well, you know, in the book of Daniel, we read that Daniel and his three companions' names were changed. Why did they do that, Brother Hutchings?
Well, they were put in the king's court. We read in the book of Daniel, the name of Belshazzar, Daniel's name was changed to Belshazzar, and Hananiah to Shadrach, and Mishael to Meshach, and Azariah to Abednego. Now, these were names that identified with the Babylonian gods in some way. The name of the Babylonian god today is Allah, and that's the name of their moon god. And so it's the same religion today in Islam as it was back in the time of Daniel. And, you know, today even when someone converts to Islam, like Cassius Clay, his name was changed to Muhammad Ali. And, you know, the name of the most common name for children today, you can look in the internet. There's a lot of Muslims in this country, in England and everywhere. The most common name given to a child is not Mark, Luke, or John, or Paul, it's Muhammad. So they change the name. And anyone converts to Islam, they change their name. And it's the same thing today. So they change their name after Babylonian gods or some reference to Babylonian gods because they were in the king's court. But it's the same thing today.
Brother Hutchings, one more question. Why would not Daniel and his three friends not eat the king's meat?
Well, of course, in the law, faithful Hebrews were commanded not to eat meat offered to idols. That would be blasphemy, because all the sacrifices look forward to the coming Messiah. And if they eat the king's meat, that was the indication that they had accepted the Babylonian god as their god. And they couldn't do that and still be faithful Hebrews, according to the promises in the covenant of Israel. So they couldn't eat the king's meat at all because it had been offered to idols.
And what is pulse?
It's a vegetable, combination of vegetable and nuts. Probably very good for you.
Well, Brother Hutchings, since Daniel and his friends were 10 times more healthy than the others after eating that diet, it would certainly seem so. There's something else that's very good for us too, Brother Hutchings, and that's God's Word. Your commentary on the book of Daniel expounds on what the Bible says about the life and times of Daniel in an enlightening way. Friends, you can get a copy of the 336-page book for a gift of $15 for one copy, $40 for three of them. During this special series of programs, we're also making Brother Hutchings' commentary on the book of Revelation available. And for the balance of this month, you can get Revelation for Today. It's a 224-page book for a gift of $15. Now, that's below the normal gift amount and is for a limited time only. So if you don't have it, now's the time to call, write, or go online for it. Better yet, get both books at the same time for an offering of $25. To make your contribution and get either or both books, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or visit our website at swrc.com. We really need to hear from listeners to some of the stations we're on now. No matter how you contact us, please give us the call letters or dial position of this station. When you ask for Daniel the Prophet, Revelation for Today, or both, and send that $15 or $25 offering, you're helping us stay on your station. But we must know which one it is to properly credit the gift. Call 800-652-1144. Thanks for your help. Stay tuned now for a question and answer over most of these stations, and join us tomorrow as we continue this series on your Watchman on the Wall program, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries Question and Answer. Answering today's question is Dr. Larry Spargimino. Brother Larry, there are so many things in the Old Testament that we in the church age simply don't observe. How then is the Old Testament relevant for today?
Well, Jerry, you're right. There is much in the Old Testament that is not obligatory for us. The reason is that the Old Testament is covenant law. It provided the legal terms for God's covenant with Israel. Since we are no longer under that particular covenant, Many of the laws and stipulations of that covenant are no longer binding on us. On the other hand, there are many things found in the Old Testament that are still very much binding on us. Murder, adultery, and incest are all condemned in the Old Testament. These are sins in today's church age as well. Hence, just because something is condemned in Leviticus does not mean that it is not condemned today. There are some prohibited activities in the Old Testament that are no longer prohibited today. On the other hand, there are also some things prohibited in the Old Testament that are still prohibited today. Even though the Old Testament is covenant law, there are certain moral aspects of covenant law that are morally binding even on us who are outside of that covenant. In Romans 13, 9 and 10, the Apostle Paul quotes from the Old Testament, "For this thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. If there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law." Brother Jerry, it is clear from this that love is a perpetually binding ethic.
But what about a passage like Leviticus 18:22 and Leviticus 20:13? In these passages, we see a strong condemnation of homosexuality. But doesn't Leviticus also condemn eating shellfish and eating pork?
Leviticus does, but there is a big difference between the dietary prohibitions found in Leviticus and the prohibition against homosexuality. The latter is also prohibited in the New Testament, where the dietary restrictions are no longer in force. Paul wipes out the observance of times and special religious diets, but he never wipes out God's condemnation of homosexuality. It is common in some circles, Jerry, to reject everything in the Old Testament. Those who do so forget that there are moral obligations in the Old Testament that are still binding upon us. I've heard people reject a teaching in the Old Testament by saying, "Well, that's not for us. We are no longer under the law." However, there are some teachings in the Old Testament that predate the giving of the law. This was Paul's argument in Galatians 3:17. The law, which was given 430 years after God's covenant of grace with Abraham, does not nullify God's covenant of grace.
Doesn't the death penalty fit into that category?
Well, Jerry, it sure does. Genesis 9:6 says, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man." Capital punishment was not instituted by the Mosaic law. Hence, the passing of the Mosaic law does not nullify the death penalty.
That's today's question and answer from Dr. Larry Spargimino. To get a copy of the monthly Bible in the News question and answer publication, call 1-800-652-1144. The number again, 800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or visit the website at swrc.com. Please include a gift of $3 to cover shipping and handling. Join us for the next Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report or question and answer.